So I mentioned yesterday that Jesus is a terrible advertiser. He usually puts forward the worst part first, so that we learn how to go through or pass through the door of difficulty, so that when resurrection happens, it's a surprise. Because it's always so much easier, of course, to be lured ahead with a little bit of honey. And strangely enough, this is what we are encouraged to do as evangelists. We are supposed to, in a sense, lead people on with a hope or with a promise. But we mustn't be so naive so as to think that the good times are going to keep on a rolling. And most people fall into an unconscious paganism when they try. When we keep trying to hope that the good times will keep on a rolling, that's when we start having those little blinders where we refuse to see the difficulties coming down the pipe. You can imagine this where, like, a young woman or a young man, they're about to get married and they're thinking, it's going to be great, it's going to be great, it's going to be great. And it's like, yeah, but did you see how he treated the waitress? Doesn't matter. It's going to be great, it's going to be great, it's going to be great. And then boom. And then, of course, you just say, but did you see how he treated the waitress? When he sees you like a waitress, that's how he'll treat you. Now, I'm going to be different. It's all going to be different. Bupkis. And then, of course, now we have the other problem. You have a person so broken, that you don't say, I told you so. Ever. Right? Maybe after a few decades when the wound has been healed, then you can say, okay, now learn this lesson for your own kids, or learn this lesson just in general. But until we are willing, and until the person is in a place to receive the wisdom, there's absolutely no good whatsoever in saying, I told you so. More Catholics don't come back to church now because they're afraid of the I told you so than anything. They've already learned what we've been teaching about life, relationships, sexuality. They've already learned it. And if you listen really closely, even to the most militant of so-called progressive people, they know that the whole thing has crumbled. But they don't want to come back to an I told you so Christian. And this was something that in the letter that Pope Francis released late last night, which I've started reading, he's warned us about already. He said, yes, be merciful, precisely because if you don't know that you need mercy, you're going to be pretty brutal at giving it to somebody else. And the more you've been forgiven, the more you will forgive. These are small little tidbits of wisdom that temper the heart, that prevent a youthful idiot from being more of a youthful idiot, that gradually that youthful idiocy and that desire for the good is tempered for an understanding of what is the greater good. God himself doing his will, understanding his purposes. And you're given today in the first reading the wisdom of the man Gamaliel. He was Paul's teacher when he was Saul. He was the guy who taught him to be Pharisee of Pharisees, widely respected in the Jewish world for his wisdom and his prudence. And it's interesting because I haven't done extensive research on it, but as far as we can tell, he remained a Jew for the rest of his life. But Paul still respected him. And I mentioned a few weeks ago that Luke has its primary apostolic source in the preaching and witness of the Apostle Paul. I mentioned as well that in the Acts of the Apostles, at a certain point, you can actually see when Luke is traveling with Paul because he uses the first person plural. And we went here, and we went here, and we went here and did this. And then Paul went there, and Paul went there, and Paul went there and did this. That you get the glimpse that they actually spent time together and that Luke was listening to Paul teaching. And now you get this little bits of wisdom. Very rarely does a non-Christian get named and yet painted so well. Because wisdom vindicates those who possess her. And Gamaliel gives us a glimpse as to how we are to exercise judgment when we are coming across something that appears divine, but we don't want to get suckered in too quick. Patience. Don't run your mouth. Watch and wait. And he gives us a long list of supposed messianic figures, because we often think that Jesus would have been the only guy preaching in Palestine during his lifetime. Nope. We would think that Gamaliel would be the only Pharisee at that particular time. No. How many apostles were there? Many. How many religious customs were there? Many. How do you tell which one is of God? The one that lasts. But with one more nuance. And still bears fruit. Lasting and bearing fruit. This is an important thing for us Christians, because there are things that last a long time, but rocks last a long time. But they ain't living. That's precisely why they live a really, really long time, because their criteria of decay is pretty small. So usually things like Gnosticism, paganism, New Age, its modern version, all these things, they keep coming back because they are the permanent resting bed of a heart that just wants to be complacent. Well, it's all one. There's no distinctions in things. You and I are all a part of God. And you notice that when people talk like that, they just get the result is nothing. They don't do anything. They don't accomplish anything. In the end, if they come to church, they sit by themselves. No justice is accomplished in a society. No society is transformed. But at least they can hang on their Lululemon yoga mat and feel good about themselves. What we need is the radical encounter with the God who is both eternal and active. If we just believe that God is out there and cares about us, well, no, not even. We're barely better than Aristotle. But when we know that God eternally bears fruit and is always active in the world, we not only expect him to do the unexpected, but we also expect it to be very much like everything he's done in the past. This is why Christians and Jews study history. And that's why a Christianity or a Judaism that doesn't know its history won't understand the ways of God. Because we've seen umpteen poverty movements in the church. We've seen umpteen pseudo-renewals. We've seen movement after movement after movement and restoration after restoration and restoration. How many of us know about the Humiliati? How many of us know about the Cathars? How many of us know about all these other movements in history? It's a good chance we don't. But you know about St. Francis. You know about St. Dominic. You know about all of those possible anti-Protestant movements that happened in the Catholic Church around the time of the Reformation. But you know about St. Ignatius of Loyola, and you don't have to reject Protestantism to understand what he did. This is the eternal fruit-bearingness of God active in human history. And this is also why Christian history is different than every other form of history. It is both incredibly active and incredibly rock solid. I've used this example before. China was a very, very long-lasting civilization, because they built themselves on the premise of never changing. We as a Christian church are constantly in a process of self-renewal. And there's always two sides. One who wants to destroy the eternity of her, or those who think that her eternity is fixed. But the more we know how God acts, the more we know is that one small day, a simple disciple will realize that there's a need in the world. And he may not have very much to offer, In fact, he may only have 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But if you give it to Christ, we can feed the world. But if we become fixated on what we have and what we're doing, all in the end is we're going to have some cheap bread and some old fish that goes nowhere. Give it to Jesus. He may be testing us to see what we might think and do. But he also trusts us. Because have you ever noticed and you ever wondered, why is it that God doesn't just change things like right away? You know, why doesn't he make the church a better place? Why doesn't he make, you know, the world a better place? It's because he's waiting for you to be a saint.